You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Ryan Taez is here with me, the beloved Ryan Taez.
Yep, I am here. Beloved.
Did you, you're beloved. I think that a lot of people out there like you.
That's nice.
It is nice. It is nice. I hope you're enjoying your week, guys. I hope you're being good to yourselves. And thanks for listening. If you're tuning in here for Joe Latruglio, I hope you tune in and subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe on YouTube, please, and Apple, and wherever else you get your podcasts. The handles to follow us on the, because there's always some fun information that Bryce puts out there or I put out there, and the handles are
At Inside of You Pod on Twitter, At Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. We've had some great guests and some really great guests coming up, so I'm really excited. Joe Latruglio, in just a second, let me just say a few things. I will be at the Motor City Convention, Motor City Con, October 15th with Tom Welling, doing a Smallville Nights. Get your tickets now online. We're going to be doing a Smallville Nights together. Also, October 9th, we'll be doing a Stage It, playing a lot of music. So if you go to stageit.com, stageit.com, Rob and I, the band Sunspin, we're going to be playing a lot of jams. It's Rob's birthday, so make sure you tune in. Make sure you tune in. You also get tickets at sunspin.com along with awesome merch. You can get Inside of You merch at Inside of the Inside of You online store. There's Lex Luthor stuff. There's Smallville stuff. There's Inside of You stuff. And last but not least, my lovely patrons, I love you. Thanks for supporting the podcast. A little extra to help the podcast move along. Just go to patreon.com/insideofyou. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/insideofyou. I'll write you a message right after. There's different tiers. There's different things. It's a wonderful community. I really love it. Joe Latruglio, fantastic. Just love having him on the podcast. He talks about the final season and shooting Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Really exciting stuff. And he's been in a lot of other stuff. You've probably seen his face in Wet Hot American Summer. What did you love mostly about this?
I just like his energy. He's just a good guy.
He's just a good freaking dude. And he's got some great stories. And I'm really excited about his new horror movie that he's directing. And we'll get into all that. So right now, let's just get into it. Let's get inside of Joe Latruglio.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience. Joe, this is a treat. It's watching you pull up.
Thanks for having me again.
I love having you, and you were such a great guest last time. And, you know, I know you've been incredibly busy, dude. Like, I just love watching your career, because I talked about this a little bit before, but you're always the guy that was like, oh, yeah, you had a scene in that, right?
Yeah.
It was just kind of like you were moving and shaking and going. You did the comedy troupe, the state, and you were always, and then all of a sudden, things just took off.
Yeah, you know, that's how these things go. I think we touched on this a little bit last time. Is you got to find the right people. You got to surround yourself with good people, people that are better than you, and then.
Is that what you always do? You surround yourself by better people.
I try to surround myself with people that are, you know, more talented than I, so I can raise the game. I think that's the smart thing to do. You know, there's a mix. Of course, there's a mix, right? You can't always be around people that are better, but I think it's an advantage, and it's a way to improve yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't really talk about this, but you grew up in Florida.
I did.
I said Florida.
It's Florida.
You say Florida?
No,
Florida.
I say Florida. I say Florida.
I do say Florida, but sometimes I say Florida. But what was that like? Were you like a popular guy in high school?
No, I wasn't unpopular. I rode the line between being in the drama department, which I was, and captain of the swim team, which is athletics, but it's the swim team. So it's
you
not...
were the captain of the swim team.
Yeah, but
you're a swimmer.
I'm a swimmer. I was a backstroker, but because I was involved in a I'm using air quotes, a sport. Mm-hmm. It is a sport. It's a sport I love. But in the high school vernacular, in the high school world, swimming isn't, you know, put on the pedestal.
Did you shave your body?
I nared it.
You nared it?
I nared
Doesn't
it.
Doesn't nair burn the skin?
It does.
I tried it with some of my back hair once,
and
that didn't go well.
It wasn't the best thing. But I nared it, yeah.
Is that for the aerodynamics? Is that
it's the hydrodynamics, I guess. It didn't work. You know, it didn't add any, it didn't take off any time.
Well, you know, like, what's funny is I swear to God, I didn't start puberty till late, like junior in high school. I had no hair under my arms. So when we played basketball, cause I grew up in Indiana and I didn't play basketball much, but when we did like, you know, pickup games,
yeah,
I'd always fear that I was going to be, not the shirts. I was going to be the skins.
Oh, okay.
And then one time this guy, Mike Curry, who had armpit hair probably in fourth grade, just hairy and the Hendersons down there.
Uh-huh.
I remember he looked at me and goes, Rosenbaum, you don't have any hair under your arms. Dude, are you serious? You're in high school. And everybody looked at me and I go,
oh, no.
Oh, I'm a swimmer.
Oh, see, that's what I mean. Immediately it goes to, I mean, you didn't mean it in a derogatory way.
I lied.
But you lied.
I lied.
You know, and swimmers aren't looked upon as very valiant athletes in high school.
But they're hairless. I got away with it.
You got away with it.
I was on my feet. I kind of picked that up, said, I'm a swimmer.
Yep.
I don't have hair, and people bought into it. So
you did it. You got by.
I did. I got by. But you were.
So I was liked. I was not an unpopular kid. But people, you know, I was a bit of a weirdo. I was into the Mad Magazine and horror movies. And, you know, I was a strange, lovely, weird kid. But, was able to get along with most. So, and I was funny. That was the other thing. So, you know, that helped.
And your parents were cool.
They were very cool.
They liked what you were doing. They accepted everything they liked. Didn't they think did. You were weird that you were watching horror movies?
No. They were very supportive. Still are. Yeah. Yeah. They were down with it. I remember like asking my mom, like, there's something worth me. I like blood too much. She's like, no, there's nothing weird. You just, which is to say, like when I was watching horror movies, I loved all the gore effects. And I thought that was weird that I was just obsessed with that. And I would, you know, and I'm like, Mom, is there something wrong? She's like, no, relax.
What is it though? What is it about you and I, you and me, that we.
Just you and I.
Is that Eddie Rabbit?
That's.
Just you and I.
Now I'm playing. Peaches and Herb, I think.
No.
No?
I think they sang Reunited.
Seals and Croft, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
Let's not.
But with the horror movies, what was it? What is it about horror movies that we, since we're a kid, we want to be scared? For me, it's the adrenaline. It's like going on a roller coaster. And when there's a good horror movie, which there aren't good horror movies out there, there aren't very many. Yeah. I get an adrenaline. I get scared. I like getting scared. And that to me is fun. Is that what it was to you?
Yeah, it was that. I think there's like this element of like, you're not supposed to watch this. Don't watch this. Don't do it. It'll scare you. That's, you know, that'll give you nightmares.
Right.
You know, I think that was part of it. And also, you know, you're a kid. You want to see some like action and creatures and things that don't exist and get scared. I guess. I don't know. I'm literally armchair experting this.
Are you? Topic. Are yeah. you? Like because now you fast forward to all this stuff. And you finally get to do, I mean, we'll talk about Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the final season. We'll talk about some other stuff, but like you get to direct a horror movie. This has got to talk about this. Is this a dream of yours to always direct this movie? It's called Outpost. Oh, and you were talking about this briefly last time.
I mean, it's a hard place to start. I'm, you know, to give context here, I'm just a week back from finishing this project that has been with me, 3 years, but has really been with me, you know, 37 years since I was 13 trying to make a horror movie. So, you know, there's much relief that like this thing is out. It's out of me. I've got this, you know, this goal to have finally done a horror movie and directed it and is kind of out of my system. And I feel lighter and more relaxed because, you know, I accomplished something that I've been wanting to do for a very long time. So there's that element of achievement there. And then the movie itself and the experience of shooting the movie is a whole other chapter of joy and bonding with the people that made it. And there's a lot of emotions mixed up in just having shot this movie on a mountain, which is a very hard thing to do. When you do something like that after hearing so many people say no, and then you do it, you kind of feel pretty badass. You kind of feel like, well,
I beat the odds.
I beyond that, I beat the odds. Like I beat the odds, but like I said what I was going to do and you didn't think I was going to do it. And so there was there's a little bit of a
ego.
Yes. There's sure. a little bit of an ego, a little bit of a chip that, you know, I have to reel in, but it's hard because you just want to kind of show people that it can be done, you know, if you find the right people to do it with and you really want to do it. I was watching a documentary about this financier he was doing like Roger Corman movies, or I'm going to mess up the quote, but the quote was something like, movies don't get made because you make them. They get made because you have a boner to make them or something like that. It's such a hard-on
that I have to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. I messed up the quote, but it's something like that.
I like your quote. Like, it's a good quote,
but it's like, you know, that's the only way a movie's going to get done. It amazes me that any movie is made at any budget, like the amount of factors that can derail a production is endless. It's just endless. And anytime, you know, one gets made, even if it sucks, I'm like, wow, man, good for them.
They
made the movie.
And you don't really understand that until you make a movie. Until you Correct. Direct a movie, and Correct. Then you have a respect for every director Correct. Who went out there and directed a
Not
movie.
Not just every director, but every person that makes a movie.
Yeah.
So whether that's from the set PA to the UPM to your second AD, I was lucky enough to finance the movie partly. And once
you paid your own money.
Yeah.
They always say, don't do that.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? They also say, like, just keep trying. Eventually you'll get the money. And then guess what happens? And then years go by and you don't get the money. And you're like, oh,
I did the same thing.
I wish I would have done it. Yeah.
I put money in.
By the way, who's going to bet on you if not yourself?
Yeah.
Always bet on yourself, man.
Right.
Like, no one else is going to do it. No one else will do it. So to me, it wasn't a waste of money, because even if the movie sucks, even if it doesn't make a dime, even if I was terrible at it, I would have been like, you know what? I've been trying to figure out whether or not I could do this, whether I liked it all my life. And I did it and I spent a lot of money, but now I know that A, I don't want to do it anymore, or B, I suck at it, or C, or whatever. And that's priceless. So I got that info. So to me, I was a no-brainer. That's an easy bet to put down, because that money is going to pay off in one way or the other, either in your being able to sleep at night, or for your dead, you can be like, all right, I did that years ago. That's just smart payment.
You don't want to be 75 years old and say, why didn't I do that? Why was I scared? Why was it fear based? Why didn't I just put some money in there?
Because everyone said, don't put your money in. And then I croak. I'm like, oh, because they said, don't put your money in.
How much money did you put in?
I can't say.
I can't disclose. But is it a million-dollar movie?
It's under $1 million movie.
Under $1 million movie. Yeah, and how many days did you shoot this movie?
We had a 16-day shoot. It was an 89-page script. We averaged between 6 and 8 pages a day. We were, it was a 16-day shoot, but we were on the mountain for 7 days, and it was an hour up to the top and an hour down. So we really lost 2 hours every day.
Did you realize that before you started in prep? Yeah. And you're like, holy shit. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, we did our due diligence there, but you know, just to brag a little bit more, and boast, is because we lost 2 hours for 7 days, that's 14 hours we lost. So we really shot the movie in 15 days.
Absolutely. Just go with that.
I just want to, yeah,
you did.
Yeah. I mean, it was a work day. I don't know. I'm still so proud of everyone that did the movie. So I can't, you know, my DP is a friend of mine. His name's Frank Barrera, and I've known him since I was 17. And he does a number of movies, from budgets like this to larger ones. And we've been wanting to do a movie for a long time. And he was with it from the get-go, and we worked, you know, a year and a half on shot lists. And when we're on the plane back from Spokane, we're just kind of shaking our heads saying, how did we pull that off? Because we were very lucky. There were no injuries on a mountain that was 6,300 feet.
Well, not only that, but about the weather.
And there were no weather events. There were no equipment failures.
Wow.
There were no ego problems on set. There were no, thankfully, no COVID outbreaks. There were nothing. And we...
Boy, are you lucky.
We were. We really were. I mean, you know.
But you would have figured it out.
Of course.
You would have figured it out if those problems did exist.
You know what filmmaking is?
What is it?
Solving problems.
Yeah.
It's problem solving.
It is.
Something you have to have
a boner for, as I recall.
That's right. It's problem solving. And also someone else, I think one of my producers said this also, is like, it's problem solving, but also throwing a party. You got to throw a party and you got to problem solve. And you got to make sure it's a safe party. Because you got to make sure everyone's having a good time.
Got to be a good host. People got to like the host.
People got to like the host. So it's somewhere in between that.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Did you run into any problems where you went to bed at night and thought, what am I doing? I can't do this. Wow, that was a terrible day. Or, wow, I'm in over my head. I thought I could do this.
A lot of that happened leading up to it and the week before. And even
sleepless
the
day, nights.
Oh, sleepless nights. Sleepless nights.
Sleepless nights.
Sleepless nights.
Sleepless nights.
Oh, there's so many sleepless nights.
So many.
But once I was in it and started shooting, there wasn't time to get upset about anything for too long or upset about anything at all because
you never lost your cool.
No, I didn't lose my cool. I don't think, I mean, you'd have to ask, you know, my lovely wife and lead Beth Topher. So the wife was a lead. She was.
Oh, incredible. Now come on. That had a whole thing, because I know that you worked with her in Brooklyn Nine-Nine and I believe you directed an episode that she was in.
No, I didn't direct the one she was in. She was in an episode. We've acted together before in the Wet Hot American Summer series on Netflix. And we work very, very well together. Very well. We hadn't acted in, we didn't do the actor director thing yet. But we thought we had a pretty good shot at that because of the type of people we are. Beth is an incredible actor and doesn't, you know, require a lot of hand holding.
That's good. She doesn't need to be told how great she is all the time.
Well, I think every actor, including myself,
needs that. How was I? Am I giving you what you want? Yes, yeah. It's fine. Yeah,
I think we're all there, including me. No, but you know, it was helpful because I had a conversation with all the actors, you know, all of whom were friends of mine, except for one, Otto Sando, who was incredible in this movie. And his vibe was incredible and got along with everyone great. But the rest of the cast I knew well. And we had a conversation about what kind of production this was going to be, which was one that ran very fast. And because of the logistics of the production, we wouldn't really have time for a lot of takes. And so they knew that we were going to move pretty fast.
Know your shit. Hit your mark. Know your lines.
Which they all did. And I said, look, you know, we're in a tight space. A lot of the movie takes place in this fire tower. It's a 12-foot by 12-foot space. There's enough room for me and the DP, who's also the operator, Frank, and the actor and like a sound person.
How many cameras?
We used one camera, Mini Alexa. However, you know, when you rent a camera, they give you another body just as a backup. And so then we bought extra accessories to make sure at bare minimum that could work. We couldn't pull focus on it, but on heavier days, we had two cameras. But in addition to that, we were shooting second unit while we're shooting our first unit.
So, and you're trusting the other guys to do your second unit.
Yes, because we had to. And also the other guys were, you know, our second unit team was my unit production manager, Jay Smith. He's out of Portland, and he also was a first AD and second AD on other movies. And so, second unit director on other movies. So he became like a point guy. But our main guy was this great camera operator out of Spokane named Deshaun Bedford, and he would be running B camera on the days we would run two cameras. And then on the other days, he would go out with a different camera, either the Mini Lexa if we weren't using that, or the Black Magic 4K, and he would do other second unit stuff.
Right.
We had a Panasonic GH5. Now I'm really kind of listing all the, this is the nerdy stuff.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
All the equipment stuff.
Stuff
but
you're learning along the way.
We had a lot of cameras because we didn't want to miss anything.
Is it a scary movie? Is it psychological? Is it paranoid? It's got to be, is it bloody?
Yeah, there's gore in there. I think it's a pretty scary movie. We'll see. I mean, there were, it's about a woman who experienced this violent assault, and she goes to a lookout tower to, you know, try to get her life back in order, get some peace of mind and isolation. But the PTSD and the isolation does not give her the self-recovery that she was hoping for, and it kind of spins her out. So the movie's a lot about, you know, seeing things that aren't there, and what's real, what's not, and mainly what happens when you don't get help for a traumatic event that you can't handle on your own to recover.
BetterHelp online therapy. That's exactly what you
brought
do.
Brought to you by
Better. I'm telling you, they're one of our sponsors. But you know, that's true.
Terrific.
When you don't get therapy, when you don't work your demons
correct.
Out,
yeah.
these things happen.
Yeah,
and that's what happens to her in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it goes over a lot of mental illness in this movie for sure.
Did you deal with mental illness as a child, or had family members that dealt with it?
No, I mean, I have levels of like OCD and. But nothing that I didn't suffer from depression or anything.
You've
like
never
that.
Suffered from any kind of depression, really?
I've been depressed for sure, of
but
course.
Situational and depression.
Yeah,
sort
yeah.
Of like.
I was never too anxious. I feel more anxious now that I'm older than I remember
yeah,
being
what,
as a kid.
What is that? Why does this happen?
I think because you just have more to lose. I mean, the stakes are higher.
Why?
I think you know more about the world and how terrible it can be. how many awful things are in it and how many incredible things are in it too. But you know, you're just like, man, you know, a lot of the randomness I think can bring anxiety to
that's
people.
True.
You know,
but that's what happens. It seems like the older I get, the more anxious I get, the more I care. And I'm like, why do you care so much? When you were younger, you didn't care so much. You weren't stressed as much.
Yeah.
You just
yeah.
kind of filled your days with fun and work and just went with the flow.
Yeah, well, it was easier to be in the moment then, right?
Do you, when you're working with your wife, and we'll move on here, but when you're working with your wife, is there any times where she's like, Joe, I get it, where you have those moments? And do you talk about these moments before they happen? Like, look, we're working close together. I'm directing you. I'm going to say things. You're going to get mad at me. I want more. And I'm your husband, and this is going to be odd.
Yeah. We did talk about it. And, you know, we got through it. There was only one episode. It was totally my fault. Mm. And I didn't lose my cool, but the you know, it was in the first two, one or it was like maybe it was day three. And we were at the end of the day, and it was completely unprofessional on my part, but I'm going to come clean because this is what this podcast is about. We're getting inside of me.
Come clean, please.
I'm going to come clean. And you know, it was,
and by the way, I'll tell you if it was your fault.
No, it definitely was my fault. It was, and you know, as you know, she asked, as any actor would do, she's like, what's my action here? What am I supposed to be doing exactly? And I thought it was kind of obvious what she was supposed to be doing. And I was also, it was a long day. I was a little stressed. And I said, your action is we have 15 minutes to get this shot. And then it's the end of the day. And I was very mortified and ashamed. And she's like, okay. And then she did the action, and it wasn't right because I didn't tell her what to do. And we had to kind of reset this kind of big thing. It was totally my fault. And she was so annoyed. It had every right to be with me, but I effed up for sure in that moment. But I will say that really was the only moment like that throughout the whole show where I, and because I learned the lesson. I'm like,
right,
just
learn your lesson early.
I learned it early, and you know, and it was during the big climactic scene at the end, and there was certain, you know, pacing of action that I needed, and I just wasn't clear. And anyway, so that was the lesson learned. And other than that, we were spot on, fantastic. I love working with her, and it was great because, you know, I wrote the role with her in mind, and I knew that she had all the levels to play it. And then watching her do it, I'm like, man, there's still more there that I didn't even see. She was terrific in it.
How many years ago did you write this script?
I broke the story.
Broke the story?
in the spring of 2018, in like March of 2018.
Oh, so this happened pretty quickly. Within 3 years, you make a movie. That's rare.
It's rare. And you know what? I was, to show you how like out of touch of with reality I was like, I'm going to write it in March. And then this summer, I'm going to shoot it, like the summer of 2018. Like an idiot. Like I just... I'm an impatient person by nature.
I want to do it now. We got to do it now.
I've always, that's been my burden, the cross that I've have to.
And you have a child, Eli, and you can't be, you have correct. To learn patience, don't that, you? Oh, when you have a child.
I'm telling you, this is going to be his great lesson to me is I have to learn it now. And that's always been a stick in the mud for me. And I learned it on this project for sure. Even though, as you say, 3 years is no time. From, you know, conception to, you know, end of
that's
production
fast.
To get something
Dodgeball took 12 years to make. No one would buy it. No one would
is
make
that
it.
Right?
Something like 12 years. Did you hear that, Ryan?
No, I never heard that.
Yeah. Something like 12 years. So
that's
even
amazing.
Even the funny movies, the hit movies, they take a long time to make. And like you said, you got to have a boner for it. You have to say, I'm making this fucking movie.
Yeah.
I'm making it. And you made it.
I made it.
I'm proud of you.
Thanks, man.
It's such an achievement.
It.
No, nobody could take that away from you. That you went and made a movie.
I had a lot of, I really did have a lot of support and a lot of friends like yourself and others that you know that have been like, you're going to do it, dude. You'll get it done. And it was nice to hear that.
Did your other friends, like the guys from the state who have been your friends since New York University back in the day, who then you went on to do Wet Hot American Summer and tons of Stella shorts and tons of, did they ever get jealous that, oh, he's the one who got the hit show on Brooklyn Nine-Nine-Nine?
I don't know.
Oh, he's the one who's going to direct a movie. Where's our roles? We gave him these roles in Wet Hot. What do you mean you don't know?
Because I don't think so. They're all doing incredibly well.
I know.
Like,
I know.
It's not like, you know, they're all so amazing. Amazingly talented. Again, this gets back to like surrounding yourself with people that are better. And you know, look, jealousy is something we've all, that's a green eyed monster.
It is.
We've all dealt with that.
Yeah, we have. Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean, how many seasons is this now?
On August 12th, the eighth season will be premiering on NBC. And I'm really excited, and it's strange coming out of something as personal as Outpost, the horror movie, into this other incredibly impactful and ginormous part of my life that's changed my life. Brooklyn Nine-Nine finally coming to its eighth season. Like, this season has been in the making for like almost 2 years. And it's got, so many things have happened in the world. Our writers have had to rewrite this season at least 3 times.
Wow. Based on just COVID and Black Lives Matter and all these important things.
Based on COVID and then George Floyd and then some other stuff happened with, and so it was just an endless, that's their commitment to getting it right and making it funny is just so impressive to me. I get back to patience. I wouldn't have the patience for it. I'm like, oh, enough. Just NBC, just take these. We did this a year ago.
Well, they love the show that much that they rewrote the entire season.
They really did.
And how many episodes?
We did 10 episodes.
And you're done.
This is it, unfortunately, until, you know, whatever reunion happens, which I'm sure it will at some point. But
how emotional is that for you on your last day of shooting?
Do you remember that day?
Very vividly. Yeah, very vividly. It was, you know, all day is filled. You get to the lot and all day it's just filled with anticipation. Everyone knows that it's going to end today. And so all the scenes that you're doing, there's kind of like, you're trying to be present, but it's really about like soon the final scene's coming up. The final scene is coming up. The final thing, it's going to come up. And so, you know, it was truly great to have everyone there and feel that out. And then that scene comes and, you know, I can't give any of it away, but I'll say that it was very difficult to for the eyes not to stay wet during the scene.
Wow.
Because the scene is very close to what was happening in real life. And there was just this palpable, like, pulsating in the room. So during the shot, there's like this moment. During the scene, there's this moment. And we're all making eye contact. And it's truly, oh, I get emotional thinking about it. It was so intense. And then it ends. And, you know, the where it really sank in is like before the take started, our one of our crew members.
I could also tell you like the emotion on you that you're just, I could see you.
Oh,
Hal, you're going back.
I'm
there.
Going back
trying,
in
you're
it.
Trying to resist. Let it go.
Our AC Chris, you know, hits the clapstick, and you hear our director Claire Scanlon directed the last one, and she's like, it's like, Phil, widen out, you know, to get like the wide, you know, shot. And you know, Chris is, he's like 99 forever, slaps the stick. And
we're 99 like, forever. Is that the only time he said that?
That's the only time that was said. Yeah. 99 forever. And you know, on a clapstick on the slate and everyone's like, here we go. And so, you know, we run it for a long time. We don't really cut a lot. We're just like rolling and rolling and rolling. So we knew this is it. Like before the cut, before you hear cut, that's what you would hear. That's how they would do it.
Right.
And I just blow your ears out. Sorry. We knew this was going to be it. So anyway, that happens. You know, we do hear cut. There's this big, big exhale and roar and clap and applause and hugs. But quick hugs, because it's COVID.
quick
hugs with 6 foot long arms.
Right.
And we all go outside, you know, because there's going to be a nice, there's a podium out there and everyone is 6 feet apart and listening to our DP Rick Page and our creator Dan Gore and just say a few words. And then the thing I was most not prepared for was, you know, when they wrap you out as an actor and they're just going up the call sheet, you know, and they're like, Joel McKinnon Miller, that's a series wrap on Joel McKinnon Miller. And everyone's just like, oh no. And I was just not, I couldn't keep it together.
What?
Once they got to me,
you were gone.
Oh, I lost it. I was just like, you know, you hear your name, you know, said for the last time on a show that has brought so much, you know, wealth and joy. Wealth, I say that financially and in emotionally and spiritually to your life. That and that you're so grateful. You're just filled with this gratitude, and you can't believe it's over. And you know you're going to still be in touch with everyone, but it'll be different. You know, we're not going to see each other every day. And all of that heaviness, all that truth is just coming down. It's just raining on you. You're like, oh, you're like just got to. You're just trying
to. So you really lost it. You're crying. You're like really crying.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Were there anyone who it was like, it was Sandberg emotional?
Everyone was emotional.
Everyone. There wasn't one person who was kind of stoic.
Everyone.
Who was happy that it was fucking over.
Maybe Andre Brower.
He was like, yes.
No. Everyone in their own way. Like you could read their eyes. Like it wasn't all tears, but by body language or just their look or how, I mean, everyone you felt knew the magnitude of the end. And what was really nice is that, you know, after that happened, a few of us put our masks back on and we went into the bullpen for the last time. And we went out on the kind of rooftop, the fake rooftop out there, and just reminisced a little bit in a quieter area. You know, it wasn't everyone. It was just the cast and a couple of the writers. And we just talked about, you know, favorite episodes and memories. And it was a beautiful end. And we finally left around 10 p.m. where we knew that you walked off the set and then that was it. The pneumatic drills were going to be heard in the morning. Everything was coming
down. Taking it apart.
Taking it apart. It was all going to go down. You're looking at it for the last time and you're just like, wow, this place is forever in my head. And I hope that all the moments that I had over the past 8 years are in a secure place up in the noggin that I can remember, because this is it. All this tangible stuff that goes away tomorrow morning. That's it. And it was intense, man.
Did you cry to your wife?
Oh my God. I came home and I literally collapsed into Beth's arms. And like literally hitch sobbed, like, just got it. I was like, it was out. Yeah, man, it felt great.
I mean, when you rewind and you go back to the first day on set 8 years ago, do you ever, I mean, because no one ever thinks this is going to last eight seasons. Like, I'm lucky to be here. We think as actors, we're going to be fired tomorrow.
Right.
This is it. They're going to see the dailies. They're going to say,
they're going to find out the truth.
They're going to find out the truth. We always do that. So you had no thought of like, there's something special here. When did it click that this is special?
How do I put this? Cause no one knew it was going to go 8 years. I'll say that I knew, you know, from having been part of, other great collaborations where the cast clicked, that I knew it was going to be fun and I knew it was going to be good. That I knew. So I knew that, I didn't know if it would be good with the audience, if people would like it, but I knew it would be something we'd like, we being the cast and friends of mine that are like-minded. I don't think it became something special, really, until we got canceled and picked up. I mean, I feel like that's when, for me, the kind of...
When was that, season six?
That was after season five.
After
season five. So once that happened, I felt that the show took on kind of a mythical new chapter of this phoenix that was raised from the ash. And that became the story of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because, you know, we were all over the news and, you know, more people were suddenly in tune and aware of this show than it or they had ever been when it was on the air. And so that's, for me, I think when you saw the power of the people that watched the show, of the fans, of how important it was to them, and how 5 years of what we were trying to do, which was not like, this is how it should be. It's more like, wouldn't it be great if it was like this, the, you know, police force, you know? And that's always been the approach that resonated with a lot of other people that whether, I don't think anyone really believed it could be that, but they believed in the desire for it to be like that. And I think that was very powerful for a lot of people.
Wow. I mean, when a show's canceled, I've never been on a show that was even reconsidered. Like, you know, you get canceled.
Didn't Smallville get canceled?
Never got canceled.
Okay.
So, I mean, if something gets canceled 99.9% of the time, it's done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, sometimes they go, oh, well, let's shop it around other networks. It never happens.
Name
three shows that it's done.
Yeah.
It's happened. You just can't really do that.
Did it happen with Scrubs?
Yeah. Scrubs went to ABC after like eight or nine seasons. It was the tail end of it.
Right.
I think it happened with Happy Endings, right?
I can't remember Happy Endings.
But Happy Endings didn't last that many
years. It didn't, so. But I thought that might have jumped too.
But to be canceled in the fifth season.
But to your point, yes, not often. It doesn't really happen.
Were you like, this is done? You never thought in a million years this is going to get picked up again?
Oh, yeah. I was moving on. And not celebrating is not the right word, but I was kind of with friends and, you know, raising a glass to what great things that the show had brought and to be grateful and everything ends and, you know, and then suddenly it was alive.
Well, I know how you think because I think that way. But when the show's over now after eight seasons and it's about to premiere, of course you're thinking about your next job now, right?
Well, yes. Although, you know, I knew that this year was going to be completely committed to Outpost, that I didn't really think too much about what's next because the movie was so important to me. But also, I don't know. I was just hoping that, and still do that. You know, I got a pretty good foot in the door now, I would think, after a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And part of me was worried that, like, hey man, you're gonna lose your heat. Hey man, you got to jump from one thing to another. You got to lose your heat. And then that, I kicked that voice out of my head,
right,
pretty quickly. But I don't. I honestly don't know what my next job is.
Are you doing Reno 911?
Oh man, you want to hear something really sad?
Yeah.
I know you don't want to hear something sad. They're starting shooting today.
You just couldn't be there.
I couldn't be there because I jump into my edit tomorrow.
I thought you were gonna say because of the podcast. No. You really ruined the whole fucking thing, man.
Rosie, you really blew it.
I'm doing your podcast,
Tom Bancari.
But you're working on the movie, so you have a certain, like, when you're done with the movie, you have like a couple of weeks of editing and sound.
Weeks, like a month, like,
right. So you couldn't do it, and they wanted you to do it,
of course. And I wanted to do it. They were so spectacular, and here's the connection there. So our DP, Frank Barrera, also is shooting Reno. So Frank went, you know, to Idaho and did Outpost with me on this mountain, this crazy shoot, rested for a week. We just got back a week ago, and now he's jumping in to do Reno.
How do they do that?
Talk about a hero. Talk about
an MVP.
How do
they have the strength to do that?
Well, he's incredible. He's just truly, he's just great, and he's going to crush it on Reno too. And he had shot the last season of Reno as well, when the one that I was on, the season 8, I think, or maybe season 7, whatever the last one was. But they're doing a movie now, and I miss those guys so much. And the whole gang, I mean, I had such a blast when we did the show on the now defunct Quibi. I think those episodes are now being redone to premiere on somewhere else.
Do you want to jump on another series? Would you rather continue doing movies? What is it? Do you want to do it all?
Here's what I'd like to do, Rosie. I'd love to do a show for a few months a year and make a little bit of money and then just finance my movies. Because you know what was really nice is being able to hire who you want and
being in charge.
Being
in a way.
In charge, yeah.
You like being in control. Because in a lot of ways, your whole life, not to say you haven't had control, but the studio is you know,
yeah,
hanging over
me.
They're the money people. Oh, you want me to do this movie? You're the boss. I'm just a guy who's coming on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, it's always like that. But this,
and that's okay. I mean, that's I like doing that too sometimes. But like at least for this first movie, I'm like, if it's going to be my first, maybe only one, who knows how it's going to turn out? I gotta fail my own way. Like if it's going to not work, I gotta make sure it's because of me and not because someone else was, you know, making creative decisions that I disagreed with.
Right.
And so that was a big plus, but it was also nice just to get to understand low budget filmmaking. And like you see behind the curtain, you peek under every rock, you understand every dynamic, every person that has to be hired to make this movie.
And how one person can bring the whole ship down if they're bad or if they're not doing their job.
I mean, we were lucky. It was just me and two other people financing this movie. People. So it was nice. Three human beings, not this like.
All right. So $350,000 you spend on this movie. I'm not going to go there.
But it was nice to have, you know, a smaller investment group. As well. Anyway, I mean, I learned a lot on this movie.
Well, let me ask you this. You're not going to dictate based on this movie's, the outcome of this movie. Let's say Outpost, hopefully it's a smash hit. It's great. It gets received well, but you're not going to make a decision on directing again and doing another movie if the movie just doesn't do well and you don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. I loved it. So I definitely want to do it again. And we're just going to see whether I really will. The only way I'm going to do it again is if I do pay for it, because no one's going to give me any money, or whether it's different, where they're like, hey, that was great. Yeah, we'll help you finance this movie. I had a great time, man. And I want to work with those people again, as well as old friends that I have worked with for a long time. It was a very rewarding experience. And I can't wait.
What a year. I mean, it's the last season. You go through this emotional wave of a wave of emotion through Brooklyn Nine-Nine-Nine. You direct your first feature that you've been wanting to do, that's your passion. You've loved horror movies since a kid. You direct this movie. Now you're going into post. I mean, what, probably the biggest year of your life in a lot of ways.
In many ways, yeah. Well, it was going to be, I knew it was going to be a pretty big year with the ending of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Outpost finally happening, for sure.
What was your, look, Ryan was a big fan of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
How many episodes did you watch?
All of them.
You've seen one of them.
Yeah, I've seen
What's your favorite one?
I don't know, but I can remember like the specific bit that got me into it was when you dropped the muffin.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
one of the funniest things I'd seen that year. It was just like a really like funny secret, like just the way you said, I don't know, it's like something about the way you said muffin.
He
slams his head into a counter. It's great.
I was sent, someone sent me a video of their like 4-year-old child. It might have been David Minor or maybe his granddaughter. I can't remember. Anyway, I digress. But this toddler was imitating that moment, and it was the most adorable. And she wasn't really doing it. She was just kind of like, there was a pillow, and she'd do a pillow and be like, my head, my muffin, my head, my muffin. She would just go back and forth, and it was the most adorable thing.
It was just really well done. I was really happy to see it. Yeah.
This is called Shit Talking with Joe.
I'm terrible at this.
This is great. These are just from fans, my patrons, my level patrons.
Oh nice.
Who, if you want to join Patreon, patreon.com/insideofyou. But they have questions.
Okay.
Emily asks, what was your favorite episode to film in Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
You know, that's very hard. There's 153 of them.
Right, but
you have to remember that most of them I've forgotten.
Okay, so those weren't the ones.
No, I'll say I don't know. I'm sorry, Emily. There was a lot. This season, I can't talk about this season. There's a bunch this season that I'm really excited about. That's not helpful.
Some of your favorite stuff.
Some of my, honestly, like there's some great, great, very fun episodes in this upcoming season.
When was it, did you think that they're like, not to say you weren't funny, but Joe Latruglio, we got to give him more and more. When did you see that start to happen?
Was it from the bat,
or do you think they really started building your character more as the seasons went on?
I tell you, as soon as I saw that I was not number one on the call sheet, I had an issue. And it was an uphill battle from that point, saying, listen, man, number six needs some bits. Number six needs some bits.
That does happen.
You know, and so that's when they knew, like, oh boy.
We're in for it. Steph A., this is a tough question. I don't think you'll answer it honestly, to be honest with you.
Who's the funniest? No,
who will you miss most from Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I can't answer
that. Can you name the top two?
I cannot.
You do have someone in your head that you will miss the most. In your mind that you won't say.
I have like, as soon as one comes into my head, another three like pop. And I'm like, oh man. You know, and it's
not a fair question.
It's a hard.
I could tell you who I missed the most when I left my show.
Yeah, who?
I'm not going to talk about it.
Yeah. It's hard, right?
It is hard.
Yeah.
No, I think I miss my makeup artist.
Oh, that's Natalie. Nice to say.
She was like my mother. I was with her hours, you know, putting the makeup on and all this stuff and like, you know, the head stuff.
Yeah.
And I just remember like, I'm going to miss her the most because I spent the most time with her and she knew my whole life. She was like, she was really family. Yeah. But cast members, that's difficult.
We all got so tight. I mean, we really did. I mean, you know, there are some that I will see more than others because, you know, like Terry's very busy. Andre's on the, you know, East Coast. But Andy and Steph and Melissa and Chelsea, I feel like I'll see those guys.
Leanne P., you know, she knows that you're directing a horror movie. As a horror film, psychological thriller movie fan herself, she was wondering what some of your favorite horror films were.
Ah, that's a great question. Well, I'll lead with The Brood, David Cronenberg.
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
Wow.
And I love all his stuff. But
how about the movie to your right that we just talked about, underrated movie?
Oh, well, Return of the Living Dead. I love that movie, too. And I love the humor in that movie. You know, you got a lot in here, Rosie, that I love. The Thing is up there for sure.
Oh, The Thing.
You know, the Outpost was, there's a few movies that influenced that. Repulsion was one of them. The Shining. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 78.
Look at you going
Amityville,
deep.
Amityville Horror, Amityville. 79. A lot of Zooms in that one.
Yeah.
And they that house.
I miss those old Zooms. Did you do some of that in yours?
They're coming back in Outpost. Yeah.
Thank God. I love those things. I love the whole, you know, the pans and the tilts and the Zooms. And
we got all of them. We got all the we got the T's, we got the P's, we got the Z's, baby.
They did it a lot in the old 70s and 80s.
They took their time with it.
The Chief wants to know the funniest shenanigan off-camera moment on the set of Superbad. Do you remember anything really funny happening on Superbad? I mean, you were there a bit.
I was there a bit.
That's been a while.
I know it's been a while. Like we had a lot of. I just remember it was very chill that set. That's where I met Bill Hader for the first time. And
what a genius he is.
He is.
When he does that impression from Dateline, Keith Morrison.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it just kills me.
He's great. I met really all those guys there. I had known the director, Greg Mottola. We had traveled in the same circles when we lived in New York in the mid-90s. I remember that I was super nervous because there was going to be a lot of improv in the scene where I hit Jonah Hill with the car. You know, that whole scene is just like, I don't know, maybe it was like maybe a half a page or maybe a page of dialogue. And there was just, you know, Judd wanted to keep us going and Greg wanted to keep us going. And, you know, I was just motor mouth because that was a lot of just nerves. Luckily, it came out funny. That was fun to do. I mean, that scene was great.
What about when it doesn't come out funny? Does the director say, hey, yeah, get rid of all that stuff?
No, I think they just know the director would be like, well, I'll cut that. But, you know, I think directors probably shouldn't be like, that wasn't funny. Don't do that.
Or that didn't work. I mean, people say, let's try something different.
That's what you say. You say, all right, great. We got that. You know, and then you say,
look at the big director over here. We got that. That was great.
That was great.
Great job. You're a liar. Nice. You're a lying director.
No, we did get that though.
We did get it.
I remember I watched a guy that I knew, years ago. There was a guy that I traveled in the same circle with. He was a friend, but not a friend, but kind of a friend. Friend enough where I had to not lie to him. And he went up and did stand up. And it was just horrendous. It was a failure. And he was tone deaf. He didn't really get it. Like he didn't, and he comes off and he's pretty happy. He's like, yeah, man, what do you think? And I just took a beat and went like, man, you really went for it with a big smile. Like, and he did. And that's what I did. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And
that's a positive way to approach it. Because some actors,
yeah.
If you approach them with like, yeah, that's your energy's completely wrong. Everything's and some directors don't give a fuck. They'll say that.
I did this really. Here's a funny story to my dear friend Ken Marino,
He's going to be on the podcast.
Oh, great!
Ken's great.
Well, you have to ask him about this.
Okay.
So he gets this pilot. This is like in 96, 97, and you know, we'd done the state, but no one really knows who we are. He got this pilot and I went to go watch it like live. It was like, I think Mark Ruffalo was in it too. It was like the great cast. And I was in the audience and I cannot believe I did this. And just know when I did this, know that it really was coming from a place of like trying to give notes. So he's on the soundstage. I am, you know, in the bleachers that they have in the soundstage. You've been there, but for those that don't know, you know, they bring a bunch of people in and you watch this live taping. It's a three-camera show. And, you know, they do a scene and then they're like, cut. And then they kind of move stuff around in between takes. You know, the actors, if they want, could go up to the bleachers and, you know, talk to their friends or parents. So Ken looks over after a take and he kind of does like, you know, shrugs his shoulder and looks at me like, how'd I do? Like, you know, hands out, like, what do you think? And I give with my hand, like an okay, I'm trying to describe for the listeners, like an okay with the hand, not an okay sign, like what would you call it? Like you're tilting the hand up like this. But then I go, then I turn, like
the
I'm turning a knob.
Down.
No, turn it up. So I turn the volume, like signal, turning the volume dial and then giving a thumbs up, like turn it up. Basically, it was okay. Turn it up. His face was like, what? Like he was not ready to kind of hear, you know, nothing other than like, great man, all good.
Was
like,
he mad?
He wasn't mad. I think he was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know. It was really like, of course he was terrific, but I just wanted, I guess 1997 Joe wanted more at the time out of Ken Marino for that take. I guess he could have given a little bit more, you know?
Could you imagine? Oh, that is hilarious.
Can you imagine your friend, you invite your friend for support and you're like, listen, come on. And you're like, hey, turn it up a bit.
Come on, you can do better. It's better than that. Bigger's better.
You have to ask him about it.
Yeah, remind me of that. Oh my God. What a treat. So, you know, and I love you, man. Sebastian wants to know, the part you played, was it specifically written for you? The high-pitched voice still kills him today.
Thanks, Ryan. No, it wasn't.
Sebastian.
Sebastian.
What did you say?
I said Ryan.
Oh, that's
Ryan. Who's sitting next to me?
Yeah.
Thanks, Sebastian.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Alan. Anyway,
no, it was not written for me. That was just a choice that John Hamburg had for the character.
How many choices do you think you make on average that you improvise something and it gets in?
I would say per scene, I probably make about 89 choices per scene. The first 40 are within the first few lines. And then, you know, the rest, you'll get about 20. I'm not talking, I'll make 20 choices with my face that you wouldn't be able to tell. But I'm making them. And then the last part is where their choices really come into play.
Really?
I close with about 3 choices at one time.
Do you ever, while you're on set, whether it's Brooklyn Nine-Nine or whatever,
yeah,
do something and you're like, I was not great in that scene.
Yes, often.
And then move on?
Yeah, yeah. A couple times I've done like, well, we didn't get that, but we're going to move on. And I'm not that proud of that. And it was because I had only made 50 choices that time and not the 89.
Do you say that out loud? Like, do you ever mention that or you just move on? You don't ever like comment on, you're like, well, we're going to move on, but I wasn't good. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. People, like, they'll move on to like, you know, the kind of break room set and I'll still be in the bullpen being like, well, didn't get that one, guys. Swung and missed on that one, guys. Like, Joe, come on in. We got to, you know, do a quick blocking rehearsal. Yep. Didn't get it.
Still thinking about the other scene.
I've done that before. I have nightmares about a scene. They're like, why did I do it like that? Why didn't I have more confidence? Why didn't I?
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like that? Like all of a sudden your confidence level for one scene's down than it was up on another?
Yeah, often. Usually after lunch, my confidence is down.
You're tired. You had too much Parmesan.
I just got up from a nap. I'm like, oh, man, where's my espresso? You know?
Well, this is a treat. Listen, I love having you on. I'm glad you came on. I'm so excited to see. You know, I'm a big horror movie man.
Yeah,
so if you ever want to screen it in the basement here,
oh my God.
If you ever want to, like, if I can come to a screening, I'd love to.
Absolutely.
Whatever you need from me.
Thank you, man. I'd love to come back and talk about it more once we're done.
I would love that. I cannot wait to see
it. Thanks, man.
People don't realize what it takes to make a movie, and a low budget movie under $1 million, and you're shooting up in the mountains, and you know, you make your dreams come true. And I love seeing you make your dreams come true.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Ryan, you got anything you want to say to Joe?
No, thanks. Just for, you know, being around.
Thanks, man. Ryan.
I enjoy watching you and stuff. It's always real.
Great. Well, yeah. Sebastian, it was nice sitting next to you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, man.
I love you, man. Thanks for allowing me to be inside of you.
Thanks, man.
All right, buddy.
Bye.
There you go. Wonderful man. I wish him the best in all his endeavors. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the final season. Make sure you watch it. Tune in. Thanks for staying here with us. Thanks for tuning in every week. As Ryan said, the handles are at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, and at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at Inside of You Pod on the Twitter. You can join Patreon if you want to help the podcast in other ways. My lovely Patreons really give back in more ways than one. Patreon.com/insideofyou. Stageit.com. You can see my band, Sunspin Play. It's Rob, my guitarist's birthday, my partner in crime. And you could also go to sunspin.com and get tickets if that's easier. Before we let you go here today, and I thank you sincerely for tuning in. And again, if you like the podcast, please subscribe. It helps the podcast so much. There's so many other podcasts, but if you're liking this one, if you enjoyed my candid conversations, Ryan, what would you say? How would you urge people to listen?
Just where to go?
No, why would you listen to this fucking podcast?
Because you have some good conversations, some deeper conversations that sort of go beyond just acting or show business. It starts there, but it always, because that's some interesting stuff. That's the juicy stuff. But then you get into some real talks, and they can offer you some insight on how people live. It might help you.
Yes, it helps me. And I'm sure it helps a lot of other people out there. So thanks for that. Let's read the top tier patrons. These are patrons who give back. They're in the top tier. They give back a lot to the podcast. And I'm going to read their names off. That's one of the perks. They get to hear their names read off. Here we go. Nancy D, Leah S, Trisha, Sarah V, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Mama Lauren G, Nico P, Jeffrey W. I'm sorry. It's Jerry W, not Jeffrey. Robert L, Jason W, or is that Robert I?
Robert I.
Robert I. Jason W, Apothean, Kristen K, Amelia O, Allison L, Raj
C,
Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Jennifer N, Stacy L, Jen S, Jamal F, Janelle B, Carrie B, Tabitha 272, not to be confused with
Tabitha 273,
Kimberly E, Mike E, Eldon Supremo, 99 More, Ramira, Santiago M, Sarah F, Chad W, Leanne P, Janine R, Maya R, Maya P, Maddie S, Shannon D, Belinda N, Kevin V, James R, Chris H, Dave H, Spider-Man Chase, Sheila G, Brad D, Ray H, Tabitha T, Lillian A, Michelle.
Okay.
Nice. Way to jump in there. Michael S, Talia M, Betsy D, Claire M, Laura L, Chad L, Rochelle, Nathan E, Marion, Meg K, Janelle P, Trav L, Dan N, Lorraine G, Carrie H, Veronica K, Big Stevie W. Kendall T, Angel M, Rhiannon C, Corey K, Super Sam, Coleman G, Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Liz L, Liz I, guess, Jeremy C, Andy T, Cody R, Sebastian K, Gavinator, Ann H, David C, Ellie M, John B, Brandy D, Yavor R, Camille S, Bano, Urbano, The C, Joey M, Willie F, Christina E, and Adelaide N. Welcome newcomers, welcome all new patrons, and I love you to all the patrons out there who support the podcast in so many different ways. You mean the world to me. Big shout out to my editor, Jason. You're doing a fantastic job. Big shout out to Ryan here, my engineer, my main man, my side man in crime.
The side man?
Side man in crime. And Big Bryce. Thank you, Cumulus, for supporting the podcast. And everyone that listens, be good to yourselves. Thank you for allowing me to be inside each and every one of you today. From the Hollywood Hills in California, I'm Michael Rosenbaum.
Ryan Taylor from Hollywood, California.
A little wave, Ryan. Oh. And we'll see you next time. We'll see you on the flip side. Enjoy your week. Be good to yourselves.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.